The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening. Tonight's topic is joy. And you might first consider what you feel when you hear that word. For some people, joy is almost the aim of the path. There's a sense of maybe seeking bliss or something like that. And for other people, there might even be a slight negative connotation. Joy, really? I don't know, it feels a little bit fluffy, maybe denial. And there's so many problems in the world. Surely joy is a little bit surface level, lightweight, something like that. So whatever your response is to that idea, I encourage you to consider for tonight the possibility that joy has some significant depth to it. It's not lightweight, actually. And neither is it solely concerned with bliss and ease. It has some substance. It's not an escape from meeting suffering. And I'm going to talk a bit about how it plays an essential role on the path to liberation. We need joy, actually. It's important on our path. So joy is a very beautiful quality of heart. It points toward, in an essential way, it points toward abundance. And so we're going to talk about several different kinds of joy tonight. I'm going to offer kind of an abundance or a bouquet of different experiences of joy that come on the path. So just as an overview, there's appreciative joy or empathetic joy that we can feel for the success of others. There's meditative joy that comes when the mind becomes stiller and more free of the hindrances. And there can be joy in the path, in the practice, in the Dharma itself. There's even other kinds of joy than that, perhaps, but that's what we'll try to cover tonight as I said, kind of a bouquet of different types. So let's start with this experience of joy at the success or happiness of others. This is a kind of joy that's also called mudita. It's one of the four Brahma viharas or heart qualities that we cultivate on the path. The others you might be more familiar with, metta, loving kindness, karuna, compassion, and upekkha, equanimity. Those three, along with mudita, appreciative joy, are the four Brahma viharas or divine abodes. So these are relational qualities, and they acknowledge that we live in a world that does include happiness. We see people getting what they like. We see them succeeding. We see them achieving goals and gaining praise. And one quality of having a mature heart is the ability to celebrate the joy of others in a simple, happy, natural way. The Dalai Lama said, "If I am happy when good things happen to other people, billions more chances to be happy." So really, this is a wonderful thing. All the time in the world, there's actually a lot of good things going on. There are acts of generosity and kindness being done at every moment, somewhere in the world. And we can tap into that. Now, if this is sounding a little bit difficult, often one way that we can touch into appreciative joy immediately is through animals. Like a dog. Dogs are excited about so many things. And you can catch the excitement of the dog, or watching a kitten playing with a leaf in the wind that it's gotten attracted to something. You know, we don't want to project too many things onto animals, but I think it's pretty easy to tell when there's a sense of joy or excitement in an animal, and we can catch that. We can catch that feeling. I read a study, by the way, that cute cat videos have been shown to reduce stress. So there you go. One good thing as we're connecting with joy in this simple way is to start to feel what joy feels like in our body. You know, what is it like to have that sense of uplift in just simple uplift at someone else's joy? Start to feel where that is in the body, how the energy moves, so that we can be familiar with it. And so we can experience it more often. It has a feeling in the mind too, of lightness, of openness, of warmth in a certain way. So we can get familiar with that. And then we can cultivate it for people also, of course. And, you know, one way that we do this is to say phrases. The common phrase for mudita is, may your happiness and good fortune continue. May your happiness and good fortune continue. So we wish well for the success and happiness of others. When we do that, we can also feel the joy in our body and maybe imagine an image of the person being happy or joyful, and allow that feeling to mature in us, to cook in us, if you will. Another form of joy practice is to evoke somehow that feeling of mudita through an image or a phrase, and then kind of drop the object that we were thinking of and actually just radiate that feeling from our heart, concentrated into the heart center, and just feel it like a light shining from inside. It's a wonderful way to cultivate mudita. So it's natural, of course, that as we try to cultivate appreciative or empathetic joy, we will run into what gets in the way of that. And that's just as normal. It doesn't mean the practice isn't working. And you can imagine that the what's called the far enemy, or the thing that really opposes our ability to feel mudita, is envy. So somebody else gets some success or gains something, and we think, well, why did they get that? They didn't deserve that. Or we think, I should have gotten that. How come I didn't get that instead or also? And so there's a turning toward the self, or somehow some envy. And so it's helpful just to notice that this blocks our appreciative joy. One thing that fuels envy, the reason that we might have such feelings, is there can be an idea that in order to be happy, we have to get something. And so seeing somebody else get something, we feel like, well, how come I didn't get something? And so, but if we can learn to feel this joy for others receiving, we feel a great amount of relief. We can realize, oh, actually, I can be happy without getting something. There is a kind of happiness that doesn't come from that. And so this is actually quite a wonderful discovery for us. Like the Dalai Lama says, it greatly increases our chances of happiness in the world. Now, we don't, of course, have to feel joy at somebody else's joy. It may be that they're feeling joy about something that's a little bit unwholesome, or that we suspect is not going to be good for them in the long run. So it's not like you have to, have to experience joy if someone else is feeling joyful. Maybe if we see that it's not leading in a good direction, compassion would be a better response. So just so you're aware of that. There is also what's called a near enemy of mudita, of appreciative joy, and that is sometimes called giddiness. It's not a word we use very often, but you can get the sense of it. It's like a sort of over-the-top excitement about something and getting caught up in somebody else's pleasure and joy, such that we lose our own balance. You know, we fall into it, and we're no longer aware, present, centered in ourselves. So our own heart. So you can feel when that's happening. We've probably all experienced that tumbling feeling of giddiness. And so that's just be aware. That's not really mudita. So overall, mudita is, of course, a great way to reduce our self-focus, like all the brahma-viharas are, all of the heart qualities are. So we undermine, you know, this belief that we have, sometimes subtly, that we need to be receiving and getting and, you know, being praised and bolstered all the time in order to feel happy. We don't, actually. There are many other forms of happiness available, and it is an expansive feeling of heart to be able to tap into mudita. So much recommended as a cultivation. Now, in addition, there's a whole other flavor of joy that comes from meditation. And this is something that the mind starts to feel when it has less of the hindrances and less caught up in sense pleasures and sort of our usual pursuits. So this comes again through sitting practice. It's called piti, P-I-T-I, and I'll get to it in a moment. Often when people start sitting, there's not a lot of joy in the sitting. And that can be because we're busy dealing with body pain, or we've somehow taken on sitting as an obligation or a chore, and we're just trying to be with the breath or bring the mind back all the time. It's a sort of work. Where's the joy? Where's the joy in that? There is an accessible way into meditative joy. We practiced it during the meditation, which is that even being mindful has a slight amount of pleasure to it. You know, it's not our usual kind of sense pleasure, like eating chocolate or something, but being present as opposed to being lost or caught up in something is actually slightly pleasant. It's a very subtle kind of joy, being there, being present. And we can tap into that. As I said in the meditation, even when what we're mindful of is something unpleasant or a little painful or something, the fact that we're present for it, we can start to appreciate that that's better than being lost. And so that's an easy, accessible way to start. And so every time you get lost, which we do all the time in meditation, when the mind comes back, we wake up, and, oh, right, meditation, mindful, we notice at that moment, it feels better. There's a clarity that isn't there when we were lost. And that clarity is slightly pleasant. Then we tune into that. Then the mind wants to be present a little bit more often. So that's our first little taste of meditative joy, actually, just being present. And then it's also just fine, as we did in the sitting, to, as we start to feel some degree of ease or peace or softening in the body, slowing down of the mind, anything that's some direction toward well-being, it's totally fine to notice that and appreciate it. We don't need to grab onto it and try to make it bigger and try to hold on to it. That will only cause more difficulty, but you can appreciate those good feelings that start to come in meditation and just let them be nourished by our attention to them. Let them be naturally present. And that's also a nice way to slowly cultivate meditative joy. And then we will eventually, at some point, start to feel some genuine sense of well-being emerging from meditation. You know, we know that it's coming because we're sitting there with some seclusion of the body, some seclusion of the mind. We start to feel an internal sense of well-being. And it's often felt most strongly in the body. We may even feel some kinds of piti, meditative joy, feel almost like tingling or energy in the body. Sometimes the hair stands on end. It's kind of delightful, these little feelings that we have. And then it can also settle a little bit more and be more pervasive. But this is a wonderful development when it starts to come in meditation. And maybe you'll have it once and then not for a while. It's not like it comes and then stays forever. But just start to notice when these feelings come. One way that we can know that what we're having is meditative joy is that full, balanced piti leads to tranquility. Now, this is not our usual mode with joy, right? It's not your usual kind of excitement, which tends to agitate the mind. Meditative joy is pleasant in and of itself, and it leads to tranquility. It's almost like there's a little core of tranquility with this joy wrapped around it. And we touch the joy first, and as we settle into it and deepen into it, we then touch the tranquility that's at its heart. So that's you might reflect for a moment. Do you know anything of this kind of joy, even a little bit, sense of settledness and well-being that can come through the meditation? So mostly meditative joy comes as the mind softens and becomes more continuously mindful. We don't have to try to cultivate it. In fact, that's sometimes be counterproductive. It emerges from a mind that is soft and more or less continually mindful. So here's a nice simile from the suttas that I wanted to read about this. Just like a lake with spring water welling up from within, having no inflow from the east, west, north, or south, and with the skies not supplying rain, so that the cool fount of water welling up from the lake would permeate and pervade, suffuse and fill it with cool waters, there being no part of the lake unpervaded by the cool waters. Even so, the meditator permeates this very body with the rapture and pleasure born of concentration or of composure. So there's a sense like, okay, lost in all the words, a sense of a lake with a well within it that is bringing something up. It's coming from meditation itself. So what is the value of this joy? There are a number of benefits, of course, but the main one is this deep sense of well-being that starts to train the mind that something besides sense pleasures and thinking and our usual ways of trying to get pleasure, there's something deeper than that that's actually more satisfying. This is from the Dhammapada. Tasting the flavor of solitude and peace, one becomes free of distress and evil. Drinking the flavor of Dharma joy. So it starts out as talking about a concentration, a settling of mind that leads to this joy, the solitude and peace. It gives the clue to that. But then this last line, drinking the flavor of Dharma joy, that's going to lead us into the next section. I want to turn now to the kind of joy that can come from the practice itself, or joy in the practice, in the path, in the Dharma. And there isn't just one word for this, like mudita or piti. It comes from a whole bunch of different places. So now we really get to expand our bouquet of different kinds of joy. I'll go through some ways that the practice itself generates joy. So it's great. I love this third kind of joy that we're talking about. So one way that it can come is through ethical conduct. And this isn't anything complicated or heavy or rigid. It's that when we've generally behaved well, you know, we've said and done things that were wholesome enough, we get to the end of the day and we feel good about how that went. As sort of a sense of joy. It's actually called the bliss of blamelessness. We don't need to absolutize that or make it, you know, blamelessness sounds a little bit too idealistic to me. But essentially, we can get to the end of the day and feel like it went okay. That's actually a very precious feeling. It nourishes us to realize that we've generally said and done and even thought things that were good throughout the day. It also comes from having confidence or faith, if you will, in the path. So when we have a moment where we realize that we're confident that what we're doing is the right thing. You know, I have times when I realize I'm just grateful that I have a path. You know, I'm grateful that I have some way of managing the things that come up during the day in my mind and my body. That's right. I have a path. And when I reflect on that, I feel a certain kind of joy just emerges naturally, kind of a delight. Oh, yeah, good. There's there's support, there's a way to deal with life. Interestingly, joy can also come from renunciation. Now, renunciation is not usually our favorite word, but it really just means letting go. And in this case, it could mean we don't have so much conventional focus on stuff and wealth and prestige and identity. It's like we're not so wrapped up in those usual kinds of pursuits that the advertisements and the marketers tell us will make us happy. When we realize, not really, that's not really the path to happiness, we can start to feel a subtle kind of joy just in simplicity of living a more balanced way. The mind gets clearer. So the Buddha describes a certain kind of joy that arises from, if you will, the wisdom of renunciation. I'll read a little bit about that. So seeing things as they are. So he says, when, by knowing the impermanence, change, fading away, and cessation of, let's say, forms, could be any of the five sense objects, but material things, and one sees, as it actually is with proper wisdom, that forms are all impermanent and subject to change, joy arises. Such joy as this is called the joy based on renunciation. That's interesting. So it's a little subtle, but it means that, you know, if I'm using this cup and, you know, it's a nice cup, holds water, but I know at the same time that I'm looking at it that it's subject to breakage. It's not a permanent source of happiness for me. I like it right now, but wouldn't be wise to place all of my happiness in this cup. There's certain subtle joy that comes from knowing that, you know, there's some wisdom there. And maybe a cup is a somewhat trivial example, but we can think about how the path and the practice allow us to realize, not take the bait of things in the world quite so easily. Of course, we still do sometimes, but there can be a certain joy in having that strength, knowing, okay, I know that all things change, they're going to pass. I shouldn't rely on this completely. So if you do feel that, if you have some sense of that in some areas of your life, take joy in that. Not everyone knows that. It's a kind of wisdom and a kind of joy. So we should get also to a question that people sometimes ask at this point, which is, why or how can we be joyful in a world with pain? You know, in the face of pain, why be joyful? So first off, let me ask, why not? Seriously, why not? So I do encounter people who think it's some kind of a betrayal to be happy or joyful or peaceful or light when there is so much suffering in the world or in a difficult situation. You know, why wouldn't you just fall into that and get agitated and worried like everybody else to show that you care? But I would again ask a little question, betrayal of what? Betrayal of what? So the Buddhist teachings point us toward a happiness that is unconditioned. What does that mean? That's a word we don't use very often either, but it means a kind of happiness that is not subject to the conditions of the world. So not dependent on things being a certain way. You can be happy if they're this way or that way or this other way. And it doesn't mean that at every moment we're skipping down the aisles and laughing. That wouldn't be appropriate in every situation. But there's a way in which we have a certain happiness of heart that can be present with anything in various ways appropriate to that situation. So we can look for that in our heart. We can look for ways that we can find joy. At the very least, we have the joy of presence. If we're present for suffering, yeah, we may feel compassion for the suffering, concern, wishing to help. And in that deep presence, for that wisdom of being there for something, there is actually a little bit of joy. There's still that joy of presence, subtle, but it's there. So Jack Kornfield says it this way: in joy, we are not afraid of pleasure. We do not mistakenly believe it is disloyal to the suffering of the world to honor the happiness we have been given. So if we have some happiness in our life, we're not being disloyal to appreciate and enjoy that. Or this from Archbishop Desmond Tutu, wonderful minister from South Africa. It helps no one if you sacrifice your joy because others are suffering. We people who care must be filled with joy so that others recognize that caring, helping, and being generous are not a burden. They are a joy. So how about that? We people who care. We people who care must be filled with joy so that others recognize caring is a joy. It's so valuable to see radiant, joyful helpers of the world. And so inspiring and necessary, uplifting, offer some hope, some vision, even in the face of suffering. My friend spent some time in South Africa, and she was fortunate enough to be working at an art museum where Archbishop Tutu came for some event that was being held there. And somehow she managed to be standing just about 6 feet from him. And she said, he lit up the room. He was made of pure joy. So there's just something so valuable in this quality, and so many ways that we can touch into it in our practice. There's the mudita, the appreciative joy for others. There's the meditative joy that can come from settling the mind. There's the joy in the path, practice, the Dharma itself that can fuel us through times in our practice that are difficult, or through meeting the world and its difficulties. And in the end, joy is one of the factors of awakening. There are 7 factors of awakening. One of them is right in the middle, is joy. And it's a necessary component for awakening, so that we have a mind with some degree of lightness, some happiness that is coming from the heart, from the path itself. And when the mind is in a state like that, as well as possessing a number of other wholesome factors, that's when it can awaken. So I encourage you to touch into this very beautiful quality that's accessible in a number of ways, through seeing other people, through the presence of mindfulness, through reflection, through the settling of the mind, and through wisdom, and through ethics. Almost everything can be a door to joy if we are looking for it and are open to that. So to whatever degree you're able to touch into that, whether it's just a little bit or whether you feel the opening of the heart happens to be tonight, I encourage you to really appreciate that and let it fill your being so that we can help others with that. So may your practice and your path and your heart be joyful. Be well.